The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Yeah, baby, it's time to get it on again. We are all over the world here on Tony Curry Radio. Of course, you can find the app in your app store, Google App Store, wherever you want to go. Get the TKR app like 100,000 folks have already done that. And on top of that, we're also at 102.9. Down there in the beautiful state of Florida. We're also in the Coastal Sports Network. We're all over the place and wherever you get your favorite podcast. You can find us also on our only YouTube channel that is named K4Wins. K4Wins, also our website, K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com on X at K4Winners. Huge show today. Of course, on the heels of another fantastic show we got going on tomorrow on ABC 3340, a local show here on the ABC affiliate. It butts right up against the SEC Game of the Week every single week. Tim Brando, the voice of Tim Brando, joined us for the show for a good solid 16 minutes yesterday. He dropped his preseason top 15. We're going to go through those. I'll get the thoughts of all my partners here in just a second. And then, of course, we're going to jump into the National Football League. But first things first, Case Kiefer, Executive Director, Chief Editor of the Las Vegas Sun, joins the top left-hand corner live from Las Vegas. Kai Gregory's been doing this stuff for over 35, 40 years on both sides. A master handicapper, 9-0 on one particular week on the starting lineup last year. We'll see if he can do that again. Coming up this football season, you can put your tongue in the cheek all you want, my friend. As long as you go 9-0, I'll play those bad boys. Another guy's been pretty hot in baseball, too. Executive Director, of course, the Birmingham Racecourse Casino. It is Kip Kiefer, a man who's been all over the place. As a matter of fact, I've got my... That's right, football weekend, information domination t-shirt. Get yours while you can get them. If you want to go to the Jocks party, there's going to be about 350 free ones. You can check it out. I'm wearing my extra large, and these aren't those cheap ones either. This is not going to be used to buff the car after one wearing. I'm actually going to wear this
shirt. Yeah, we went all out.
Yeah, you did. It's a very nice shirt, so I applaud your efforts. It's fantastic. Before we move on, Kai, how did we do last week?
Last week, 20-10, so not bad. Month of July. 71-36. Yep. I think, you know, that we gave out WNBA, CFL, tennis, golf, Major League Baseball, and unfortunately, last night, NFL. But on the wrong side, I just didn't think Detroit was going to come out and suck as much as they did. But, you know, we'll get into NFL later. But I was really, even seeing last year versus this year, first game, my fears, as Case talked about it last week, their new OC and their new DC are not going to be as good as their last ones. And so we are 574, 330, and 4 year to date.
Man, and I've been jumping through hoops all morning trying to get my NFL engaged, and I just absolutely loved it. I spent about 3 hours this morning trying to pick the teams and stuff. And everything I saw about the Detroit Lions was, has the window closed? I'm like, has the window closed already? Yeah. On the Detroit Lions, it's like, wow. Case, is that how people are planning out there in Las Vegas?
It's been interesting. I'd say there's been a little money against Detroit. I didn't really know how I'd come into the season with them, but like you, I've been doing now that training camps have opened, I've done all my work over the last couple weeks, and I feel like I came out a little higher on Detroit than the market did. I know there's like some plus 160 on them to win the division, which I technically show value there. I haven't bet it. I'm kind of conflicted because they play the Packers week one at Green Bay. They're a 2.5-point dog. I need to look back on this. I think I bet some week one when the numbers got posted. I think the Packers might have been one of them. So I'm kind of hesitant to bet them plus 160 to win the division if I already have the Packers against them week one. If they lose that, obviously the number is going to go up. Packers really didn't grade out that well numbers-wise, but to me, that they're a team you got to look out for in the NFC, and specifically the North, which obviously affects the Lions. I think for the second straight year, they're going to be the youngest team in the NFL. I just think they have a lot of tantalizing pieces where if it all comes together, they're going to be pretty scary. To me, I'm relatively down on Minnesota and Chicago. So I know the North, like the pricing is really flat between those four teams. It's kind of like I've heard cases made for all of them. To me, it's kind of still similar to last year. I feel like it's Detroit or Green Bay. I don't technically show value on Green Bay for anything. If anything, I show green value under numbers wise, but I don't know. My sense is that Green Bay will have a say too. So man, there's some great week one games. And I feel that's one of them. The Packers now a 2.5-point favorite hosting the Lions.
Don't blow your wad already, man. I mean, I know how Case is. You start letting it rip, but once he says he's been looking over NFL the last couple weeks, I know you could probably go to the top of the hour with all your NFL stuff. So we're going to get into some more National Football League stuff. I definitely want to get into this Tim Brando thing. I like to go back Tim's been a friend of ours for a long period of time. I think he'd be the first one to admit that he's been a blowhard. He likes to cover all of his bases. He'll say he loves one team, but he believes they'll lose week one. He always has his bases covered. So I want to go back and look. And Kip, we had him on the show yesterday. I want to go back and see how he did last season. In his top 15, do you know how many playoff teams that made the playoffs last year he had in his top 15 last year?
I wouldn't be able to venture a guess. I'll say five.
He had 10.
Oh, what, Timmy B.
Timmy B, he had 10. The only two teams he had making
it
good. In. Yeah, really good. The only two teams he had making it in that didn't make it in was BYU and Miami. And, of course, Clemson and Arizona State. No one thought Arizona State was going to make it in, and Clemson didn't make it into the last week. So Timmy B, 10 for 12.
That's impressive. Year, that's really impressive.
So here's what he came with.
He had SMU in, huh?
He did. He had Indiana going in number six.
Oh, that's shocking.
So, I mean, we always talk about the blind squirrel. The man's been doing radio and TV for 50 years. I think he kind of knows what he's talking about. And by the way, three Big 12 games he's got in the first seven games of the college football season. He'll be starting on August 23rd, as we all do here in Dublin, Ireland, but he'll have a different Big 12 game, so we're looking forward to that. All right,
real quick, Tony, the only problem with having Tim on TV yesterday was we only got to ask him like three questions because Tim doesn't give 30-second answers. Tim gives a 7 or 8 minute dissertation on every question. He is really, after all these years, after being a studio host for CBS, he's doing play-by-play for three games in the first 7 days of the season, as you mentioned. This guy is a professional, and there's just a handful of people that I really heavily respect their careers and their opinions, but I'm a big Tim Brando guy.
He's the only guy I can think of where, and I know this has happened, where he's dropped a football coach's name in the middle of sex with his wife. It's had to have happened. I mean, the guy's mind is constantly thinking about college football. He may have even said Gus Johnson's name a couple of times, but I mean, the guy just constantly thinking college football everywhere he goes. All right, so here is his top 15, and I'm doing the top 15 because that's what he releases, and of course there are going to be three teams here that we give that aren't going to make the playoffs. He's saying that the top 12 teams will make it. Arizona State, number 15. Number 14, the Alabama Crimson Tide. If they finish 14th and don't make the playoffs again, I'm assuming that's about a four-loss season, Kip.
At least three.
First of all, will legend be alive this time next year if, in fact, they don't make the playoffs? And second of all, what does that say about Kalen DeBoer in his second season?
Yeah, it says that they're not making the progress that they should be making because their schedule, they should not lose four games. I only see two really prickly situations in terms of their schedule. And other than that, I just think they've got it all lined up. And with some of the personnel moves they made, having Ryan Grubb back to get the offense at least consistent. I think last year, if you watched them game to game, they never really settled into any kind of organized pattern on offense. One game, they were trying to make Jalen Milroe a drop back passer. The next game, they were launching everything long. They just never had any continuity on offense. I think Grubb will improve that. So I'm going to have a hard time seeing Alabama losing more than two games, maybe three, which could even put them on the periphery of the playoffs. So 14 is possible, but I don't see it.
If they finish 14th, Kai, that means that they didn't make it because of this reason, and that is they probably didn't find themselves the right quarterback. That's what, of course, Tim Brando came with yesterday. And, of course, there's a lot of teams out there that he's got in the top 12 that didn't have a quarterback last year and are playing a guy. So I don't know why that makes any difference, whether it's going to be Simpson or someone else. But is the quarterback play, is that how Alabama's going to be gauged this year?
I mean – I don't know that necessarily it's going to be gauged, but I mean, when you go and look at every single team around, the very first thing anybody talks about is quarterback. So, I totally understand that. I'm golly, this hurts me because, I hate Alabama with a passion that just cannot be expressed if you don't know me. But if he's got him at 14, then they're right there as one of the teams that you told us to do our homework on that I think will end up in the top 10 that's not in it. Kalen DeBoer, you can say what you want about him, but he's lost, 16 games as a head coach? Mm-hmm. I still think that that they're going to be a much better team. I don't even know that they lose two games with that schedule. And it pains me. I mean, it hurts because, yes, I think they'll be in the playoffs. And it hurts me even more to know when I come on the TV show, I got to listen to Loudmouth talk about it.
Yeah.
There you go. You know what's something that no one's talking about, too, is obviously a little bit of a fall off there from going from Nick Saban to Kalen DeBoer. It's going to be that way. And, of course, you always say you don't want to be stepping into a legend's shoes. And, of course, Nick Saban, you can make an argument, he's the greatest college football coach we've ever had. But the one thing that a lot of people aren't talking about is the people that Nick Saban surrounded himself with. I mean, just think about the coordinators and the administrators. And, I mean, he's bringing in people. He was bringing in guys just for like 2 or 3 weeks, hiring them for 2 or 3 weeks and then letting them go. Chip Kelly stopped by. I mean, he had all kinds of people that weren't even they weren't even employed.
He's retired. Move on. God almighty. I hate talking about that asshole.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't know what kind of connections Kalen DeBoer has. Like, if Nick Saban called you and said, listen, you want to stop by the University of Alabama weeks 8 through 10 since you're out there in Lake Tahoe taking the summer off, you want to come check out my program, they would drop their hat in a heartbeat because they knew it was the best way to go ahead and get their next job or stay in college football. I don't know what kind of connections Kalen DeBoer has from that standpoint, so we'll see what happens. But, yeah, if they finish 14th, they're in trouble. Boise State, number 13, of course. That is one of Kai's top six teams to make it in. Then he has Oklahoma, number 12.
Boise State ahead of Alabama. I wish you wouldn't have told me who it was. All respect to Tim Brando, great broadcaster, but that's ridiculous. I mean, Boise State and Alabama on a neutral field right now, and Alabama's like a 2-touchdown favorite.
Well, they are, but I mean, if you're looking at the last 12 at the end of the season, will these be the 12 teams that make the playoffs? I mean, obviously, Boise State's not playing the same type of schedule that Alabama's playing, and okay. We know that just because you're ranked higher than a team doesn't mean you're going to beat their ass on a neutral field. You know that. Right.
I like that caveat that this is based on the end of the year. I still think Alabama at 14, and I'm not an Alabama fan. I've not even been a big backer till this year, but Alabama at 14 is just – you won't find anyone in the world, I think, that knows what they're doing that has them low this year.
Here are a couple other teams that are actually ranked higher than Alabama that's going to blow you away because they're 14th. Obviously, there's some teams that are ranked higher than them, including, of course, Oklahoma, number 12. He's got them in a playoff team, Oklahoma. Tulane, the Green Wave, number 11, which is certainly getting up a little bit.
Is that good?
Well, I mean, somebody's going to make it in. I mean, you look at Tulane's schedule. It's easy to sit there and pick and choose right now, but somebody's going to get in. Indiana did last year. Somebody's going to get in. So he's got Tulane 11, Illinois, the Fighting Illini, number 10, Oregon, number 9, Iowa State, number 8, Georgia, number 7, Penn State, number 6, Texas, 5. He's got LSU, number 4. He thinks LSU is the best team in the SEC. He believes they're going to lose to Clemson week 1, but that will only be their only loss. He thinks this is Brian Kelly's year. He's got Notre Dame, number 3. And then, of course, they've got the huge ball game to kick up the season. Clemson, number 2, who's my national champion, and he's got Ohio State repeating as the number 1 team, Ryan Day. And by the way, we did ask him his top 3 coaches. Ryan Day was not one of his 3 coaches, despite the fact that he did have Dabo in there, but he did not have Ryan Day. So there's Timmy B's top 12, top 15, how you want to lay it. I know you've already had Case. Give me some of the thoughts on what you saw. Obviously, when you get to the cream of the crop, teams seem pretty legit, pretty chalk with the Texas and the LSUs and maybe the Clemsons. But anything in there kind of excites you a little bit, or any teams that perhaps he missed that you'd like to put in the top 12 that Timmy B didn't see coming?
I probably shouldn't have been so disrespectful. So shout out to Tim. I like he's sticking his neck out there. I like that it's a little bit different. That being said, would I take those numbers and bet based off of them or something? Absolutely not. I think you're going to get absolutely flogged if you do that. Not the top 15 I would have come up with. Maybe the most shocking one to me, or not shocking because this team is getting some love and I just don't get it, but I'm not high on Iowa State this year. What'd you say? He had them 8?
Yeah,
they lost their top 2 receivers in the second round of the draft. Iowa State's just not a program that has the resources that's going to reload and be able to do that. And they won every game like in miracle fashion at the end of the year.
No doubt.
That tends to regress from one way. So, I'm not even necessarily down on Boise, although that's the first one that got the reaction out of me. I think Iowa State at 8 is way too high for me. I feel like I've kind of been alone on a couple of the teams he has ranked extremely highly, higher than me, but I'm really high on LSU and Notre Dame, and I feel like my feelings have not been reciprocated by anyone that I respect or talk to. I feel like there's a lot lower opinions on those two teams. So those are two teams that I'm kind of buying on coming into the year, and based on him having them 3-4, certainly sounds like he is too. I do think Alabama at 14, not to harp on it too much, but I do think that's the one he's way too low on. Interesting movement since the last, I think I haven't been on the show in about 2 weeks, and hopefully you've been listening to us. I think ever since like April or May, I said I bet Alabama to win the national championship 20-1, to win the SEC 6-1. One thing I unfortunately didn't do is bet Ty Simpson to win the Heisman, because there has just been an avalanche of Alabama action here in the last 2 weeks. All the sharp money now on Alabama. I think you can only – the best price now in the SEC is 4-1, best price on the national championship 12-1. And some group or syndicate, someone just pounded Ty Simpson in the last week. He was as high as 66-1 to win the Heisman. Wow. Highest price I saw yesterday digging through it, now 20-1. So Alabama is Tim Brando might be against him, but there's millions of dollars coming in on them now, which feels pretty good, as I am very pro Alabama this year. But as far as betting market wise, I think Alabama's moved up into the absolute elite tier if you look at how the money's coming in.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but last offseason, right before the year, there was a ton of money coming in on Jalen Milroe. And how did that work out?
Season looked pretty good, but man, later it didn't.
Yeah, I was part of that. And this is a bigger picture thing, but I think he was available like 20-1. I think I might have bet him 20-1. I still don't necessarily think that was a terrible bet going into it with DeBoer's. Obviously he didn't turn out. He didn't win it, but it's hard. 20-1, that's what, you're hitting what, you need to be hitting more than like 5%. I don't know. I still liked the setup there. So I don't necessarily torch anyone that was on that. I know the sentiment on Alabama, I felt like, was way more mixed last year overall. It seems like right now it's in a positive state.
Yeah. Kip, I want you to listen to the schedule and tell me how many wins you hear for this team. You got Western Illinois at home. You got Duke on the road. You got a Western Michigan at home. You got Indiana on the road. You got USC at home. You got Purdue on the road. You got Ohio State at home. You got at Washington. You got Rutgers at home. You got Maryland at home. And you got Wisconsin on the road. And you finish up the season against Northwestern. That would be Timmy B's number 10, Fighting Illini. We've been talking about Penn State all year and Ohio State, obviously. Can the Illini make the top 12 of that schedule?
I guess just, I'm trying to choose
Take
my
a breath,
words,
my friend.
I'm trying to choose my words carefully here. I just have so much Big Ten contempt. It's almost like we have to wedge another Big Ten team in here. This whole controversy right now of them getting 4 qualifying spots. If you look a lot of the preseason polls, they really only have Ohio State and Penn State. So, I guess you have to take an Illinois or an Indiana or Iowa or somebody. And I think Illinois played over their head a little bit last year. I do like Altmyer, who's an SEC kid. He's from Starkville, Mississippi. He played at Ole Miss. He's ended up being the quarterback at Illinois, and I think he's viable. But I know they lost some guys in the portal, too. Their leading rusher last year is now playing for Georgia. Maybe Illinois, and that schedule is ridiculously weak. All the controversy demanding the SEC play a 9th game, which at some point they need to do, but comparing their schedules to the SEC schedules with the completely, at least the SEC requires their teams to play another power conference team. Yep. 6 of the Big Ten teams don't even play another power non-conference game. And that schedule you just read with Western Michigan and Southwest State, Illinois, or whoever the hell that first game was. I don't see Illinois as a real contender. They might ride the Indiana train from last year and manage to get in just because it seems like – the whole entitlement thing, trying to make the Big Ten the comparable conference to the SEC. I think they're even more top heavy this year than they have been in previous years. So, yeah, I'm not buying the Fighting Illini.
Four teams in the top 12 that are SEC teams: LSU, Texas, Georgia, and Oklahoma. Obviously, that would bode well for the previous Big Ten homers for coming into the SEC and taking half the spots. Only one team from the ACC in Clemson, number two, and of course, and you got three teams from the Big Ten: Ohio State and Penn State, and Illinois, number 10. I would agree with you on the Iowa State situation. Georgia's kind of a mixed bag right now because we really don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people are just going off Kirby Smart. If it's Kirby Smart, you know he's going to be there, and that's that Nick Saban kind of thing. He's going to be there every single year. He's going to be in the playoffs. If his team gets right, he gets the right quarterback play, the ball finds the white right, he's going to win another national title. But I do like the fact that we have all these huge games like Ohio State and Texas and Notre Dame, LSU playing big ball games. I love the fact that we're playing some really monster games early in the season, and at least according to some preseason polls, it's not going to hurt if you lose one of those games early. You're playing now, what, 14, 15, 16 games a year? You should be able to lose a game, particularly a big game early in the season, and still have a shot. So good stuff from Timmy B. And, of course, if you want to hear any more of that, you can check us out on ABC 3340. We have our own YouTube channel, ABC 3340. It's called The Starting Lineup. Check us out again every Saturday morning, 10:30, 11 o'clock. We butt up right against that first ABC SEC matchup every single Saturday. Last year it was Georgia and Clemson. We're going to have another monster coming up, Syracuse and Tennessee and more. It's going to be fantastic here on ABC 3340. You can watch our show. And, of course, watch this one right here also on our YouTube channel. It is live right now, K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. Before we get into some NFL, some useless Tony Curry stats. You ready, Kai?
Sure.
Name Major League Baseball's only team to not be swept this year.
That would be
my Cincinnati Reds. The only team in Major League Baseball that has not been swept this year.
Love that Reds bullpen last night. Fantastic job.
I don't know what's worse. Just to lose the game 11-3 and be done with it, or actually come back with eight runs at home, see the cannons going off, eight straight hits, and then lose in extras. Because Kip, I actually was gonna have DHR come over to your house last night and just make sure that you didn't try to kill yourself. I was going to do like what do they call those protective things?
I'm not on suicide watch about the Braves, and I do have to blow my own horn here and say 2 months ago on this show I said the Braves are done, they suck, and you guys all said they got too good a roster, they're gonna make a run. I think the postmortem's in. This team is just garbage.
In case you missed it last night, in the eighth inning, eight runs for the Reds, eight runs for Atlanta Braves, eight hits for the Reds, eight hits for the Atlanta Braves. It all happened. They called it a crazy eights. I've never seen a game like it. And I don't know where you were last night, Case. If you were in a book last night watching that game, I would have loved to have been sitting in a book somewhere and see somebody. Because I had a friend of mine that was actually at the game, and he's one of these guys who will not leave until the last pitch. He's like my son. He goes, I don't care what happens. If we're going to a game, we're watching the entire game. I don't care if we're down 10 runs. There were several people that obviously got up and left there in the eighth inning. They saw a hell of a comeback in the Cincinnati Reds last night, despite the fact they came up a little short. I would have loved to have seen one of the – I would have made a trip down to the book just to see if someone had that ticket.
Yeah, I was not at a book, and I wasn't even watching, but I was riding. I took a big price on the Braves. I had Atlanta plus 150. I saw they went up 11-3, and I was like, oh, great. And then I went and was doing
something.
Then I got the alert on my phone that eighth inning, 16 runs, 11-11. And I was like, are you kidding me?
I've been to Kai, you just coming off Little League tournaments. I guarantee you your games were better played than that game. Both those teams. Last night's game was just a comic strip.
Oh, I agree. I mean, we did have some games where we scored more than 11 runs, you know, as 12-year-olds. But we had a lot of 3-2 games and 4-2 games and a lot better managed games as far as pitching and hitting. I mean, watching, I had to turn the game off. I thought it was absolutely atrocious just going through that. But, I mean, it wasn't as comical as seeing Tampa Bay's shortstop going through the dugout, hugging each other, hugging people in, I think, the seventh inning because he knew he was going across the field to be with the Yankees.
Yeah.
What about two nights? I mean, it's just that part of the season of the baseball. I mean, I have a tough time staying locked in every night. The season's just so long. What about two nights ago, the Yankees, they end up winning in extras, but Austin Wells thinks there's three outs and starts walking off.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, God. Sacrifice bunt him over. So it's just tis the time of year. The baseball season is long and unrelenting, and I feel like it even wears on the guys on the field a little bit.
By the way, that was the third time in Major League history that both teams scored eight or more runs in the same inning, according to Elias. It's also the third time in the expansion era since 1961 that two teams combined for 16 or more hits in the same inning, with each team posting eight. So that's happened three times before. I can't ever remember.
Crazy.
I remember two teams scored eight runs in the same inning. And that's crazy, man. If that doesn't keep your ass in the seats, nothing will. And it was weird because every time I saw a batter up, it seemed like everyone was 3 for 5 with two singles and a homer. It was weird, man. Everyone was getting hit. So, all right, give us your Major League Baseball, Kai. You're a baseball guy. Tell us where we're at with the season. We already did a show, of course, earlier this week. By the way, you can check our show out. We're live every Tuesday and Friday, 10 o'clock Central Time. We're down here in Birmingham, Alabama. We're all over the world. And special thanks to the Coastal Sports Network for having us up and down the East Coast and all the way down in the Florida area as well. Angel and Pete Shepard, the entire crew, do a fantastic job in there. Great stick. Check them out, 102.9. But give us our baseball, and then we're going to jump into the National Football League. But how are we looking on MLB?
You know, I'm just amazed at the trade deadline, but I could literally talk for the next 3 hours about this, about how horrible some teams did and how great some teams did. And you go out there and look at it, and I really think San Diego got better yesterday, mm-hmm. a lot better. And
I agree.
I have no earthly idea what the Minnesota Twins organization was thinking going into yesterday, and they're just almost fire sale with everybody except for, I mean, they're going to be a dog in every game they play unless they're playing Colorado or the White Sox or unless Ryan is pitching. To get rid of the people they got rid of, just like the Arizona Diamondbacks just got rid of people, Baltimore getting rid of their 1-2.
Yeah, and Minnesota was only 6 games under .500. I mean, it's not like this team – I mean, if you're a fan base, you're like, shit, man, what are we doing here?
O'Hearn from Baltimore just started in the All-Star game a week ago. They basically gave him away to the Padres.
Yeah.
I mean, San Diego has shorted up. And I mean, you know, they're 3 games back. And to see that the Dodgers didn't really make any moves. Now I know they're getting healthy and their pitching rotation, getting some guys back. I think Snell is supposed to start this weekend coming back, so I do like that. I think that's going to be a really interesting race. But, you know, some of the Tony Curry useless stats we're using, run differentials, you got two teams left with losing records that have positive run differential. And I had to look at this 5 or 6 times to make sure that the second one's correct. San Francisco's 54 and 55. They're plus 5 runs. But Tampa Bay is 54 and 56. They are plus 50.
That's crazy.
I mean, it just the runs they've done, and then seeing what they did yesterday. Best home record is the Mets, believe it or not. The best road record is Houston, and then your worst home record is Colorado, and your worst road record is Colorado. And only 7 teams in Major League Baseball have a winning record on the road.
Is Rafael Devers a cancer guy? Because ever since the Giants acquired him, they absolutely stink.
I mean, you said it, not me. And then seeing what they did, I mean, I was a little Poppy fan, you know, for a long time. And he did a lot of great things in Boston, but the last couple of years, he just has absolutely done that. And then even this year in Boston, they got rid of him. I was very glad, though, Boston kept Duran, one of my favorite players with the Red Sox, hustles his butt off every day. But seeing Poppy, to answer that question, Poppy. Seeing Devers, the answer to that question is, in my opinion, absolutely, because he is more about him than anything. One of the things I loved about Big Poppy was that, you know, especially right after the bombing, he was so Boston. He was one of those guys that just came out talking about the city and so Boston, Boston, Boston. And I think Devers is me, 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 me. He is the LeBron James of the Major League Baseball.
There you have it. Major League Baseball. I was going to ask Case too, because it is such a long season and we got about 50 or 55 more games to go. And we're starting to see these weird games where teams are scoring 8 runs. But when you're talking about, Major League betting, this time of the year. Where do you find your value? Because it's weird because, you know, we look at the stats, the schedules every day. Sometimes I came with like 12 games the other day. I think I ended up with 1-5-7 or something, which is what's going to happen when you play too many games. I end up playing Kips plays as well. But when you're looking at that many games, it's hard to find a lot of great value. Is it not? Towards the end of the season, things just get too damn tight, or the prices are just too high and you just kind of lay off. Is that how you see your Major League Baseball player, gambler this time of the year?
Yeah, the prices are definitely tighter. I mean, I'm still betting a lot and don't really approach it any differently. I just try to get a win percentage on the teams and bet where I see it's off. I'm betting at this point almost exclusively overnights. So before the markets really had a chance to shift into place, that's one way where you can kind of try to beat the market being super tight. There's just so many data points now. I will say, if you look at it in a way, I mean, this trade deadline was pretty active. So if you feel like a lot of the teams change and you have a strong opinion on one team or the other, I mean, this is one time where things are going to kind of be unsettled for a couple weeks. So this is where you can start. If you want to buy or sell on a team, you can just start firing on them every week. I will say, I mean, I love the trade deadline too, and watching everything that happens. I usually, this is the part where I caution. I feel like sometimes we weigh overestimate it, not necessarily underestimate it. You can see teams bottom out, like maybe the Twins this year, or other teams that sold it. It's much easier to get much worse from the trade deadline. I just feel like a lot of times we overvalue these moves and say like, oh, they got one guy, they're going to be set over the top now. Usually I haven't seen a huge move upwards, and if anything, I think the excitement for the teams that acquired all these guys sometimes goes too far. Not to say it never works, I just think, you know, that's one thing you can look at. And I'm kind of going to contradict myself. So I know you guys mentioned the Padres, although I was already high on this team. I mean, kind of the other headliners, obviously what the Mariners did. And maybe I'm just stubborn, but I came into the season super high on the Mariners, and I'm even higher now, especially after the trade deadline. I feel like you've seen all these other teams kind of have a run, and they've never put theirs together. You know, everyone was crying about the lineup at the beginning of the year. The lineup, they come out and they're crushing, and the pitchers can't get anyone out. Now it's kind of flipped back to what we think. You know, the pitching staff is really solidified with these guys getting healthy. Like George Kirby had another great start last night. Now they can't hit. Well, they got Suarez in. I just think like one of these, it's going to come together all for a stretch. And Seattle's a team I'd really look out for. We'll see how that goes. And I'm still relatively high on the Red Sox. I feel like they've been through the ups and downs, but they're on a high right now. I think the American League's totally wide open. National League wise, maybe I'm stubborn here too, but I feel like the Dodgers, since we're making NBA equivalents, I feel like the Dodgers are kind of like an NBA team to me. I feel like they're kind of load managing. I feel like they're making these injuries last a little longer. Their whole focus is like, let's just be healthy for the playoffs, so that none of this really matters. If you give me the Dodgers and the Cubs against the field in the National League, I would take it every single time. So I think the National League to me, honestly, even after the trade deadline, it's kind of a two-team race. The American League, you can talk me into almost anyone, but my team's coming into the year with the Mariners, the Red Sox, and the Rangers, and I'm holding steady so far. I haven't added anyone else, and I'm hoping that they can make a wild card run. I really like especially where Seattle and Boston are, and Texas has shown some signs of life too. Their lineup's coming around a little bit, so we'll see. Hopefully Judge has to stay out a little bit longer. We can get the Yankees falling out of the wild card race. We can get my three, Seattle, Texas, and Boston up there. Maybe even Seattle could catch Houston. That would be a dream come true. But
I think they will catch Houston. Houston is holding on, and I mean, they added Carrasco. I mean, so what? They added a guy who 6 years ago was very good, but it's not 6 years ago.
That's right. And we've been kind of warning folks for about the last month or so that Houston is playing way over their head. They had that one run where they won 10 out of 12 or whatever, and were just rolling. But I can recall some discussions we've had on this program of saying, let's not get carried away with the Astros, because I think all of us kind of had our doubts about how good that team was.
There's no doubt. And against the Orioles, looking at the division they're in too, the West Coast division, where it seems like the Angels, they got great hitters, but they're never playing really well. And they're 3 games under .500. Houston Astros obviously still leading the division. They're 15 games over .500, so let's not poo-poo on the Astros yet. They're still playing really well. Whether it's above their head or not, who knows? But it seems like they're always there at the end. You mentioned the Yankees, too, also on a 3-game winning streak. More useless Tony Curry trivia. Ready, Kai?
Absolutely. It's part of my day.
The funny thing is you've been saying the useless Tony Curry trivia more than I have been, which is really, really nice. So I must have something going on, and I love being a burr under your big ass saddle anytime I possibly can be. Who in the NFC has the longest playoff streak for making the playoffs right now in the National Football League in the NFC?
Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay, correct.
Hey, good case.
Yeah, very nice. They have made it 5 years. They're trying to make it six.
Of course, how about the that? Division.
They were 10-7 last year, but I don't think too many people would have had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the longest NFC streak right now in the National Football League. Very nice work, my friend.
Well, who in that division is going to prevent them from doing it again?
That's a good point. For me, and I'll let you guys kind of take this because this is really the first time we really dove into the National Football League. I'm so happy because we had football last night, July 31st. We're watching, I don't care what it is, but it's live from Kent. It was just real live professional football. It was killer. It wasn't a fun game to watch.
Yeah, it was future house framers and insurance salesmen. Yeah, but
I had to watch. My boy's like, can I watch it? I said, dude, it's 20-point game. He's like, Dad, it's the National Football League. And I was like, honey. And my son's going to be probably working next to Case within the next 3 or 4 years out in Las Vegas, son. So I'm like, okay, let's watch this. I will watch it for 10 minutes. So we watched at the end. The Chargers, of course, got a late no-show touchdown. But when it comes to quarterbacks, man, I think this year, for some reason, it's always the year of the quarterback. But Lamar Jackson, will he make his first Super Bowl? Joe Burrow not making the playoffs the last 2 years, despite the fact he's had two of the best years in his entire life, along with Ja'Marr Chase. Will the Cincinnati Bengals be back? Is this Stafford's last year? What the hell is going on with Aaron Rodgers? He went to the Jets, and that was just an absolute joke. Can he do anything with the Pittsburgh Steelers? We know there's no quarterback controversy there. And then we're still talking about, you know, this guy named Russell Wilson, who just does not seem to want to go away, is now playing with Coach Dabble and, of course, the Giants. There's all kinds of great quarterback stories in the National Football League. Case, we'll start with you. When you think about the NFL going into the season, obviously Eagles reigning champs, what's the first thing that kind of tips you off a little bit and you think, that's an interesting point there in the National Football League?
Oh, man, there's so much. I don't know. I could talk about
the – pops to your head, first thing.
First thing. Well, I just heard you talk all about the quarterbacks. I don't know, super hot. Well, this isn't going to end up being true because he just signed a huge contract. But you said, is this Matthew Stafford's last year? I would say, have we already seen him play his last game? Because he hasn't even practiced yet. He has back soreness. I don't know. I've heard so many people high on the Rams, and I got to admit, at the end of last season with how they finished, and you know, they gave the Eagles a game, they blew out the Vikings in the first round of the playoffs. I saw the momentum too, but the Rams are one of these hype teams that right now I'm selling on. Just you know, I've seen the Jimmy Garoppolo experience up close. Talk about injuries, that's not the same anymore. There's some great irony in that right now. Davante Adams threw a fit here and couldn't wait to get out when Jimmy Garoppolo was throwing to him, and now he's with the Rams, and it's Jimmy Garoppolo and Davante Adams.
Wow.
Reunited, because like I said, Stafford hasn't practiced. I just feel like the whole Rams thing to me, you know, they've done a great job, one of the best run teams to stay afloat after that Super Bowl run when they had all these veterans. They hit on a lot of mid-round picks. They still don't have a ton of depth, and if Stafford isn't playing, that scares me. I don't think they have a great secondary. I think the NFC West is going to be a lot tougher this year. So just because of your quarterback's dissertation, I am selling on the Rams. And then you mentioned, I know I already talked about this at least on the starting lineup, but right after the Super Bowl, there was a team I was targeting to bet. And I love that sentiment has only gone down on them since then. I'm betting on them. This is the other thing that comes to my mind since you mentioned, but I love the Bengals this year, which is funny if you followed my career or even on you know, Kip's show or the starting lineup for my own stuff. I was like the ultimate anti-Bengals guy for years. I bet against them every week. This is just interesting how in professional sports it kind of ebbs and flows. It really is like a market you're buying and selling. I feel like people were way too high on them because of that Super Bowl run. They still have clear flaws. Now I feel like everyone is now everyone, I just hear day in, day out how bad the Bengals defense is. They have no chance to be outside of a top five defense. I really pump the brakes on that. You'll hear me say it time and time again on the show, but defense is just way easier to turn around on the fly. I know Kip's passion project is poo-pooing Mark Stoops' reputation. To me, it's Lou Anarumo. What, this guy is like – they fire him, and it's like, well, he did such a great job. It's just he didn't have the pieces. The guy had one above average defense ever in Cincinnati, and they're acting like the Pope passed away because they had to fire him when they were terrible last year. There's no doubt in my mind that Al Golden can come in, who's done more with less throughout his career as a defensive coordinator every stop. I think the absolute baseline is they get a little bit better on defense. If they get a little bit better on defense, by the end of last year, they were the best offense in the NFL, hands down.
Unstoppable.
I know, health is always a little bit of a concern, especially with Burrow. But I don't know. I just feel like these last 2 years, Joe Burrow has turned into the guy that people were acting like he was just because, and he was great. He was clutch, fun to watch, but he won some close games. I don't feel like he was really polished, like top level quarterback until the last 2 years. I think he's there now, and now everyone's ditched them because of the defense. It's tough in that division.
And they got everybody signed up too, finally. I mean, it took forever. They finally got everyone, including Hedrick, which I thought was huge.
Yeah, I do think Baltimore's still the team to beat. I mean, the most talented roster. And I don't like all that's happened with the edge rushers in Bengals camp, of course, with Shamar Stewart and this whole holdout forever. And Trey Hendrickson still not signed. Obviously, he's in camp now. So that does scare me and makes me pump the brakes a little bit. Like, I wanted to be fully bold and say, like, the Bengals are going to have a top half defense this year. You know, it kind of scares me at the most important position. They've got guys that haven't practiced much, but I still think they're going to be better. And you can get them almost plus money to make the playoffs. I think I gave out 25-1 to win the Super Bowl, Burrow MVP plus 750, Jamar Chase Offensive Player of the Year 12-1 back in February. Those are the first sets of bets I made, and I'm still high on the Bengals. So that's to start off, one team I'm buying and one team I'm selling. I'm buying the Bengals and selling the Rams.
Yeah, when it comes to power ratings, and I looked at 16 different power ratings, and the Bengals averaged around 14th. So they got them right in the middle of the pack. And again, when you're talking about Joe Burrow, I mean, just a fun team to watch. You mentioned Baltimore, too. If there's one team that's better offensively than the Cincinnati Bengals, at least statistically speaking, it's the Baltimore Ravens. Their last eight games last year, they gave up 13.6 points per ball game. The Baltimore Ravens defense was playing lights out in the back half of the season last year. And, of course, Lamar Jackson is going to be coming into another season, and we're expecting to play a bowl. There's one guy that I think I want to see him win a Super Bowl. I'd give anything to see him win a Super Bowl because I think he's a man's man. I think he's a man's quarterback. But unfortunately, five of the last six times they've lost a playoff game was to the Kansas City Chiefs. And that, of course, is Josh Allen. I want to see those guys get after it. I just love the Bills. I love what they stand for. I love it's blue-collar America. Kip, your thoughts on Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, and will this be the year? I don't want him to be the Charles Barkley of our lifetime, where he should have won a Super Bowl and just never got the chance to. Not when a Matthew Stafford had done squat. He wins a Super Bowl, and now he won't go away.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the fly in that ointment. It's been Kansas City. Buffalo has had, in my opinion, better teams especially last year when they met in the championship game, and they just can't get over that hurdle. And you've seen a lot of if you're kind of a sports historian, there's been a lot of franchises that have been in that position, and when they finally break through, then they have a good run, and Allen is the best player in the league that's never even participated in the Super Bowl. But I'm not sure that it's going to be the Chiefs this year, as Case was just mentioning. I think maybe the road for Buffalo to get there is going to have to go through Baltimore. But there's some other, you know, the league is it evolves every year. Teams that have been down can come back up pretty quick in the NFL. It's a different dynamic than college football. I think some of the franchises in the league that have kind of been, you know, doormats in recent years have made some dramatic steps forward. Two of the worst teams in recent years, the Patriots and Carolina Panthers, I think both those teams have made a lot of great acquisitions to bulk up their defenses. And talking about the Panthers, I got to answer my own question. Who's a threat to the Buccaneers in that division? I don't think the Panthers are a threat to win the division, but I think they're a team that's going to be a lot better. If you go back and look at the second half of the year after just an abysmal start, Bryce Young actually played very well in the second part of the year. Statistically, you know, he was as good as some of the top line quarterbacks, and nobody was paying attention because the team was so dreadful overall. But I think the moves they've made, the free agents they acquired, the draft picks they've made in the on the defensive side of the football, and Bryce Young's step forward this year, I think that's my number one team to watch. I think they're only 6.5 as far as the total wins of the year. That's going to be the first one I'm going to throw out there. I'm taking the Panthers over that number.
You talk about the Pats too. Man, how hard has this franchise fallen through the floor since Tom Brady took off? I mean, it's just unbelievable. They lost almost half their roster from last year's team. And, of course, Mike Vrabel came in and said, listen, we're doing it my way, and I think it's a great hire. Don't get me wrong. But if you think of the Pats are going to end up winning 7 or 8 more games this year, I don't see it happening. They basically are remasking the entire team from the top to the bottom. Another team, Kai, I think it's interesting because you were talking about some pretty big action on a team that went 12-5, 12-5, 12-5, and then 7-10 last season. Has the window closed for the Dallas Cowboys?
I mean, as long as Dak Prescott's there and Jerry Jones is there, I don't think they're ever going to win a Super Bowl again. I have
you have them not winning a Super Bowl with those two. With those two, they will not win a Super Bowl. Okay.
No, I think Jerry Jones is too involved and too he thinks way too highly of himself. He made some great moves back in the 90s with some coaches, but he thinks way too highly of himself. He has Jerry Jones World there. In Dallas with the stadium, and they can do a lot of great things, host WrestleMania, host concerts, do all these great things, but they're not going to win. I've got a friend that every year places a large wager on the Cowboys to win the Super Bowl. I talked to Case offline about this guy and maybe what, you know, some of the big books in Vegas would do for him, because he places a $5,000 wager every year on the Cowboys to win the Super Bowl, and they're plus 4,400.
Wow.
That $5,000 wager would win him $220,000 if they won. I don't think it's going to happen. Their totals, I think, sitting on 7.5. I don't like them. I'm selling them. Something that would shock people here, I talked about it right before and at the beginning. Detroit losing their OC and their DC, I think, is huge. Yeah. I am absolutely selling Detroit. I think the window's closed. Don't get me wrong. I like the head coach. Just like you know, I think Mike Vrabel was screwed over by the Titans. That is my NFL team. I'm a Titans fan. He was totally screwed over by the Titans. He was put in a crap situation. Ownership did not give him the tools that he needed, and they sure did not support him, in my opinion. I don't think that he's necessarily going to get the job done this year in New England, but I think he will build them back somewhere close. They're never going to be what they were under Belichick with Brady 10 years ago. But I am very high. I'm selling Detroit. I'm also selling Kansas City. I like their under this year. They got by the skin of their teeth so many times last year and got so lucky. And I think the horseshoe finally falls out of Patrick Mahomes' ass, and they lose some games. But I am higher than I think I've ever been on Baltimore. I love the over an 11.5. We've already put that out there. I think they get over the 11.5. And as much as it pains me, because I just do not like this team, I love Joe Burrow. I think Cincinnati also gets over their 9.5 this year. And I think you have a lot of games with Baltimore. I think there's going to be a lot of games with Detroit this year that they go under their team total in games. We hammered their over team total a lot last year. And I think with the changes with the OC, I think you're going to see them really try to run the ball a lot more this year.
A couple of interesting things to look at. You mentioned the it seems like the Chiefs are just, I mean, what they've done with that franchise over the last 7-8 years has been really remarkable, particularly with the way the salary cap happens. But Patrick Mahomes sacked 36 times last year. That's the most he's ever been sacked. That offensive line's not holding up like it used to. And I also thought it was kind of interesting at Jalen Hurts, and good for him. Man, what a wonderful story. I mean, he's at Alabama, right? They pull him in the national championship game, for God's sakes. And then they bring in Tua Tagovailoa, and, of course, he ends up winning the national championship. Jalen Hurts goes off. He goes off to Oklahoma, creates his own thing, and then ends up being a Super Bowl-winning quarterback in the National Football League. He reached out to Michael Jordan of all people a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, listen, what's the most difficult thing you've ever done in your life? He said, repeating as champ. And he goes, well, how do you do that? And Michael's advice was very, very easy. He said, take it one day at a time, brother. Just one day at a time. Don't be thinking ahead of yourself. Don't should be thinking about the next week. Just play one day at a time, one day at a time. And, of course, you're talking about a Philadelphia Eagles squad that is really as good as Jalen Hurts is. I hate the word game manager because, to me, a game manager is a good guy. He knows exactly what pieces are around him, and he knows how to utilize those pieces. And I think Jalen Hurts has done a fantastic job with that. Bo Nix, get ready for us. I'm going to just throw some names out there. You guys tell me in case you're nodding your head. Bo Nix, second year of the Broncos. You see him kind of coming out of the shell this year?
I'm really high on the Broncos. I think that the progression Bo Nix made from the, you know, well, you want to go way back from when he was at Auburn. I never thought he'd be doing what he was doing at the end of the year last year with the Broncos. But I just think him and Sean Payton really are a perfect match. So I expect them to be better offensively. And defensively, they just have – I mean, they're just stacked at every position. I think they checked every box. I haven't quite gotten there, but I'm with Kai, and I've – year after year, I have been on the opposite. I've been the guy that's, you know, this Patrick Mahomes is just different. Never doubt the Chiefs. I've been on the Chiefs every year. This is the year where I do see them taking a step back. It's hard to say they're not going to make the playoffs or whatever, but you know, I know there's some bullishness on them because they had so many receiver injuries last year, but look at training camp. All the receivers are hurt again. Rashee Rice is going to be suspended. Hollywood Brown's already not practicing. Xavier Worthy did turn into something nice by the end of last year, but he's still more like a gadget player to me, not your number one go-to. I do think if you're looking for a reason to be optimistic, I mean, the offensive line has to be better this year. There's no way to go but up, and it does seem like they got to steal what they picked 31st or whatever and got Josh Simmons from Ohio State, who most of the year was a top five, top 10 pick. And he got hurt, obviously, before the playoff and fell all the way to them. So if you're trying to make a case for the Chiefs, it's hard to argue against, you know, Mahomes and better offensive line. But, I mean, they just got historically lucky last year. I mean, they're like these bizarre events away from being like a 9-8 team almost. I mean, just off the top of my head, you had the Raiders for the first time in NFL history just setting up for a game-winning field goal at Arrowhead and snapped the ball too early and somehow they recover it. The Broncos had that short field goal. They doinked it off the upright. Isaiah Likely's like toe this small was out of bounds. Not in the age of replay. That's a loss.
It's a game of inches.
In health-wise overall, other than the receivers, I feel like they've been really lucky. When Kip was talking about the Bills, that's what came to my mind. I feel like the Bills at their peak have had better teams, but every year in the playoffs, they're just decimated on defense and don't have the guys. I just feel like there's got to be a year where things break against the Chiefs. They can't get away for this forever. So I'm kind of looking to take a shot in the division. Maybe I might just end up taking Chiefs not to win the division, especially if it gets around even money. I think it's like -110 right now. Denver's the team I'm highest on. I think the Raiders are clearly going to be better. I'm actually a little bit down on the Chargers, but it's hard to, you know, Jim Harbaugh usually gets the best out of his teams. Obviously, they got it done last year. I just feel like the schedule sets up a lot tougher. So I'm a little down on the Chiefs. And I do think this year there's an opening. It's crazy. We've had Baltimore and Buffalo, I think, have been the two best teams in the NFL the last 5 years, not in the Super Bowl. One of them is going to be absolutely devastated again this year. Mm-hmm. To me, it's weird as I think Baltimore is the clearly better roster. I guess I slightly disagree with you guys. I think Lamar Jackson's the best player in the NFL, hands down. Josh Allen's amazing. I think he's number two, but I think going into this year, it'd be Lamar Jackson for me. I like Baltimore's roster the best, but Buffalo just has an easier path in the East. I mean, they're a -350 favorite to win the East. They have such a clear path to getting the number one seed. That looms large. So I think you can make an argument for Baltimore or Buffalo. I like Baltimore's roster a little bit better. I like Buffalo's path a little bit better. But I still think Cincinnati could be a wrench in all this. I'm really high on the Bengals. So I am basically just going out on a limb, something I've never done, and saying it's not going to be the Chiefs this year. We'll see how this works out for me because it has not worked out very well the past 6 or 7 years, whatever.
By the way, Patrick Mahomes has not turned 30 years of age yet.
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, someone asked, how old is that? I said, he's going to be 32 or 33. He hasn't turned 30 years of age yet. That's fucking crazy. What was the over-under? What is the over-under on – well, I'm interested. What was the over-under on the Steelers before they got Aaron Rodgers? And what was the over-under on wins after they got Aaron Rodgers? And is anybody buying that stuff at all? If you're Coach Tomlin right now, you're probably like going, am I going through some type of time machine or something? The fact that I had Russell last year. I mean, I can't imagine. You would think – going into a guy who's obviously got a ton of tenure and integrity and trustworthiness as a Mike Tomlin, that maybe that kind of quarterback situation would work. But I can't imagine, because he's a young guy. You know, he's a guy that likes to get after these younger guys, and he wants to develop players. Now he's got a guy that's 83 years old coming in to play quarterback, and I don't know why the hell they're doing it, because the Steelers don't need to sell damn tickets. They don't. They don't give a shit about Aaron Rodgers. I'm just surprised they made that move. But what was the over-under before and after?
Yeah, it's a weird match, too, especially
it
him
really
and
his
offense. Well, it's going to be a pretty easy update. I only track Circa because they're taking the biggest bets, at least right now in the preseason. But I had, before the Aaron Rodgers signing, the over-under 8.5, even over, minus 120, under. The Aaron Rodgers signing has now got – could be something else, too, but it's moved to a whopping 8.5 still, but minus 120 to the over, even money to the under. So the very slightest of moves towards the over for Pittsburgh. I don't really see it. I bet against Pittsburgh, I feel like, most years, and they still somehow turn out with a winning record. I'm with you, though. It feels like an odd fit to me, and I don't buy Aaron Rodgers at this stage of his career. I've heard he has some supporters. I've heard people say, well, if you watch how much better he got at the end of last year, I mean, they were playing garbage times, games that meant nothing. The guy's 42 years old and maybe the toughest division in the NFL. I got to be a seller of Pittsburgh, if anything.
Yeah, and I know you follow. Yeah. I know you follow Atlanta sports, not just the Braves, but also the Falcons as well, Kip. And I wanted to ask you about Penix Jr. with the Falcons. Obviously, a lot has been putting on him, but then he's got Kirk Cousins kind of sitting by his side. Kind of a weird matchup there, because Kirk Cousins obviously has had some success, and a lot of people are saying that Penix Jr. is not going to be able to come out of the shell unless he's the man. That's not the way it works in the National Football League. What's your thoughts on the quarterback situation for the Atlanta Falcons?
Oh, I think Penix is going to be the quarterback. I think the ship has sailed with Cousins. We'll see. But you know, I thought the hire, you know, and I don't really have any personal animus toward this guy, but I think Raheem Morris was a terrible hire for them last year. They had Belichick there begging for the job. They waited till the last minute when all the more high level candidates had gone away. They were the last team to name a head coach. You know, they've got some good pieces. They showed a little bit of signs of life, but you know, yes, I follow the Braves and I pay attention to the Falcons, but I've been a Braves fan since I was basically, moved to Atlanta as a 9-year-old. And, I never have felt that way about the Falcons. The Falcons are basically a dumpster fire. They always have been. And they, of course, the pinnacle of that was getting to the Super Bowl, leading the Patriots by 3 touchdowns and letting that get away. It was the absolute perfect illustration of that franchise and how inept it is. I want to weigh in real quick on Pittsburgh. I think the Aaron Rodgers acquisition is just a bridge. They drafted Will Howard out of Ohio State. They've still got Mason Rudolph, who's a decent quarterback in terms of his potential and has played okay. I mean, I don't think he's the answer long term, but I don't know how long the Aaron Rodgers. I think he's a bridge signing just so they weren't going to go all in on 2 quarterbacks that were just kind of – they're hoping for great things. Will Howard won a national championship, of course, so we'll see what his NFL stock looks like. But I found this interesting about Pittsburgh in following the offseason situation. They made a huge deal. They expended a lot of capital and draft picks to get DK Metcalf from Seattle, and so he's coming in. But at the same time, they basically gave George Pickens away, a receiver that has a similar size and skill set to Metcalf. I guess they figured they didn't need 2, you know, big deep threat receivers. But you know, part of the and I find this to be hilarious. A lot of people writing about Pickens going to the Cowboys basically for a sack of footballs and some tees, 5th and 6th round draft choices. I think a 3rd rounder in a couple of years. I think they basically just gave him away. But the take that Pickens was an attitude problem and he was highly penalized and just a guy that plays with a chip on his shoulder. Well, that's how he's been his whole career. But you get DK Metcalf. Guess what?
DK Metcalf was the most penalized offensive player that was not an offensive lineman in the league last year. No. And I've always thought DK Metcalf had a terrible attitude. So I it's hilarious to me. Okay, we got Metcalf. We got to get rid of Pickens because Pickens is a problem on the team. But I think you're adding a guy that's got a similar skill set at a big cost. So I don't know what's going on with the Pittsburgh management right now. I don't think they're making real sound decisions. So I am not high on this team at all coming into the year.
We got to scoot every Tuesday and Friday, 10 o'clock Central Time. We're on the mornings. Of course, you can find us live on our YouTube channel on the wonderful K4Wins.com website, as well as wherever you get your favorite podcast. We're going to be on. Of course, we're getting ready for some plays, man. Every single day we got plays. K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com. Get after it. And thanks again, of course, to the fine folks there at Coastal Sports Network for having us and 102.9 down there in Fort Myers. We'll get after it again next Tuesday. Gentlemen, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
See you now.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.